This is KW6WW Net Control. Now for tonight's topic, during last week's trivia question, a discussion about FRS and GMRS radios came up, and it appeared that we needed to have some additional attention on that topic. And I've asked, got a hold of Ed, KB6DOL, and I'm not sure if Nick's going to be with us or not, KM3ICK. Both of them have experience with the FRS and GMRS radios, and asked them to join us. When I actually asked Ed about helping us cover this topic a little bit, I had mentioned to him that I wanted to cover licensing, the range or distance, antennas, the cost, and privacy codes. He wrote back to me and said that's quite a tall order for a net. He could discuss each of those topics for a very long time. So I'm hoping we can try to just stick to the basics, and maybe Ed can help walk us through some of this stuff. And Ed, are you still with us?
Yes, I am, Doc.
Ed, would you mind starting out and giving us a brief on what's the difference between FRS and GMRS?
Well, there's two primary differences, I suppose, other than the number of frequencies or channels allocated to each band. FRS is a license-free UHF, whereas GMRS is a required license. Some of the frequencies are shared by both services, and even some of the radios that you purchase enjoy some of the frequencies from both services, so it's almost kind of like a dual band radio. The FRS often are referred to as bubble packs. They usually come in twins. You buy a pair of them, you can get them at Walmart or Home Depot or all over the place. They come in the plastic packaging, and they're limited in power. They're limited to 500 milliwatts, whereas GMRS has a limit capability of 30 watts. So there's your primary differences.
And on the license requirements for the GMRS, I believe it was $85, is that correct?
That is correct. $85, that covers the entire household. It's a little different than ham radio in that one license covers the entire household. It covers all your household residents, with the exception of cousins, so grandparents, your spouse, of course, your offspring, everybody except cousins. It does not extend to cousins, and you can license on the ULS system online, and usually you'll get your call sign back in about 48 hours.
Go ahead, question.
Since it doesn't apply to cousins, wouldn't it be appropriate to have the license be in the name of the eldest grandparent or something close to that, so that it would cover everybody?
Good.
I love ingenuity. That's an excellent question. I've never heard that come up, but that does make good sense. However, it's whoever wants to have a license, can file for it. At one time, I had a license, and my spouse had a license, so we had two of them in the household, and we looked at the $85 every 5 years and said, we only need one, so we dropped yours.
KW6WW Net Control. I could also see that if you go with the eldest in the family, you might also have a problem if you ended up with a silent T.
Well, they know what.
That was me, Zero.
Okay, it was just coming. It simply made sense to me that you wanted to cover the cousins. Simply go up another generation. Can't you think they should not listen?
And I had made a comment that you could, having the eldest of the family, your risk of having a silent T definitely increases. Ed, what kind of range and antennas are involved with the differences between the FRS and the GMRS? Any questions for Ed so far, just on what we've covered? License requirements, the differences between the FRS and GMRS, or range or antennas? Let's just kind of stick to those to begin with. Are you talking about a typical 10-mile range radio.
I'm sorry, I didn't clarify myself there. You can use an HT with the BMC connector for a mag mount antenna. Most mag mounts are about 3 foot tall with center load, and that does excellent results. And of course, you can you have the utility use of the handheld once you leave the vehicle.
And the EYE, did that answer your question?
John, I guess I was primarily concerned about handheld to handheld range difference, if there is any, between FRS and GMRS. The obvious advantage of the true GMRS radio is the ability to add an external antenna. And I understand that, but I was wondering if there was any basic difference in the handheld operation using either a small whip or something like that as far as the range capability.
DOL.
Okay, well, first of all, basics, I have a watt is only going to give you a certain range with the FRS, so you're very limited when we put the half a watt. On the other hand, your HTs and GMRS are often 3 watts or even up to 5 watts, and just talking equals walkie-talkie to walkie-talkie, rubber ducky to rubber ducky, your GMRS is going to talk a lot further. A handheld on a GMRS, you're looking at probably 3 to 5 miles, just flatland, and an FRS will get you 3 to 5 blocks, maybe a little bit further, but you know you're dealing with a half a watt.
And DOL, I think that explains it a lot better, and I would say that's been pretty much my experience in the Wrightwood area, other than with the amount of vegetation that we have up here. It definitely makes a difference through the tree covers versus a flat line of sight, a desert line of sight.
Absolutely, but you do have one advantage being up on top of the mountain, is you might be able to communicate better to another mountaintop or to those down below, because you've got an antenna that's several thousand feet high.
Well, that's definitely true, and what we found with our Simplex testing on 2 meters, the mountaintops definitely make a huge difference on our range. Any additional questions so far from what's been covered by Ed, DOL? Chuck?
Yeah, I had a problem when I bought a set of radios, the FRS, GMRS, and I got an FRN, and after I had tested for the technician class, getting my actual license was delayed about 2 months because I had an FRN for the FRS, GMRS radios, and I did not provide that because I totally forgot that I had them registered through the FCC. So it's something to think about if you have it already and you don't have your FCC license for the technician class or higher.
That's interesting, Chuck, that you should say that, because mine was in just reverse. I'd already had amateur license, and then when I went to get the GMRS license, I was able to use that that number with FCC. And what Chuck's talking about is going online and doing registration or changes to your amateur radio license data or to, in this case, licensing of the GMRS. Any comments on that, Ed?
That's really interesting, and I've never heard that before. One of my good friends and GMRS members who is licensed just went through Gordon West's class and is one of our newest hams now as of about a week ago. And his went right through, no delay at all. It probably would help if you supply the upper end number, which upper end stands for FCC registration number. That's their ID for you, if you will. And one FRN actually covers all your licenses, or it should. But I've never heard of a delay, either way, either direction.
Ed, how about privacy codes? And I know that's a real issue with people using GMRS radios. You know, we're used to tones on amateur radio, but from what I understand, privacy codes from one manufacturer to the other can create problems.
There's not really a uniformity amongst the different manufacturers of your CTCSS codes. There's a general rule of 32 standard tones that I know ICOM has 36 or 38, I forgot, 36 I think. They've got a few thrown in there that are non-standard. And you can find some digital tones on some of the GMRS repeaters. I guess that's one area that GMRS differs from our 440 AM radio, and that GMRS uses PL tones exclusively. The one thing that disturbs me is the use of the word privacy tone, because it's certainly not private except to the user. When you're using a tone, that just simply is a filter, and it filters out all the other tones. So you're not talking in private, and some of the literature that comes with the radios is a little misleading along that line. And let me reset a second. The thing that really bothers me is the fact that
the smallest print on the package is about the license requirements. And I've mentioned this before, that somebody goes into Radio Shack or Walmart or Costco and sees the blister pack with for $29.95 for the 2 to 5 mile range, and right next to it for another $10 they can get 10 to 20 miles, but nowhere in any sizable print does anything about a license requirement show up.
That's absolutely correct. And a lot of the literature doesn't even mention that, it totally omits the fact that you have to have a license on some of the channels, certainly for GMRS. And because some of the FRS radios are clones with some GMRS frequencies in there, there's some of those channels you cannot use unless you have a license, a GMRS license. And one footnote, the ham radio license doesn't work on GMRS and vice versa.
WR6.
Ed, what is the... is the protocol the same as far as using, making calls on a GMRS with, as far as announcing your call sign and how frequent it has to be announced?
Yes, it's the same. No codes is the biggest thing, just plain English. No cue codes or any codes or any, no codes at all. It's just plain English is what's acceptable. And protocol for making a call would be to call the calling party's call sign first, followed by the caller's call sign. And the use of the word over is, it's kind of overused. It's better not to use over, but sometimes that's the protocol in other bands and it transfers over.
No codes. Other than that, protocol is pretty much like ham radio. H&O. Yeah? Okay, got H&O, and I think we also have George in there. Let me ask one last question, and then we'll get to Jarrell and George. Does your repeater, I believe your repeater is in Pinyon Hills, does it get very much activity, and from what kind of areas do you get the activity?
Well, it's not permanently installed yet. It's in a low level location, and eventually it will be in my home, but I have yet to get my power up. I've got it all ready to go, but I got to bury some anchors because of some of these winds. It's just scary the heck out of me. So right now it's up at the top of my barn with a mountaintop antenna on it, and the activity is somewhat low. The range is not very high or far because the antenna is not really very high. The antenna is inside the barn, up the second story. So it's totally a temporary setup that I have. About the only thing I can say is it's on the air. And it's open. It's an open machine available to use. It's on a 462.575 GMRS frequency, and the tone is 91.5.
Okay, I got you, DSL. Also, let's go with Jarrell, H&O.
If the comment was coming out, was coming up concerning the tones, and it was mentioned that a lot of the there's apparently an ICOM machine, ICOM radio that doesn't support both, that does not support split tones. Do any of the GMRS radios support no decode while using it and encode tone? You know, in the case of a lot of the ICOM amateur radios, they do not support split tones. However, they are set up to have a two-tone placed in memory, one of which can be used for receive only, and then you switch modes in the radio to use the other one for either transmit only or transmit and receive. So it makes interesting uselessness of having two different tones available in the memory. That's my own thoughts on that. So the question becomes, do any of them allow, is common amateur practice to have a transmit tone and simply wide open on the receive? KG6 regional.
Ed?
KG6 DLL. That is my choice of operation. Rather than program the radio with a split tone operation, transmitting on one tone, receiving on another, I really encourage the use of an open tone receive. All of my radios are programmed so that they're open tone receive. That way it doesn't matter. You don't even need to know it's split tone. When you transmit, you're transmitting on the correct tone for that repeater, let's say. Because things like you really don't even need a tone. And when you unkey your open tone or open squelch, and you're going to receive. I have a friend that is just the totally opposite opinion, but his stance is because of all the MRS interference. He would prefer to be closed tone. And my argument to that is that if there's an emergency, you don't know it unless they're calling on the tone that you're having to be receiving. And of course, you know, we have to yield to emergency traffic. So you would not be able to hear it if you're closed tone operating on a split tone radio. And yes, there are some GMRS radios that are type accepted and do split tone, but I don't own any of them. Well, yes, I do. I have a Motorola CDM1550 that will do that, but like I say, I don't program it that way. I prefer open tone on the receive.
George, MVO.
KW6WW, this is K6MVL. I have heard the mention of the MRS channels. Channels 1 through 14 are okay for MRS. 1 through 7 are shared with GMRS. However, 8 through 14 are MRS only, no GMRS. Georgia.
Ed, any comment?
Well, I'll just add to it. He's correct. And the radios that are clones generally go up to channel 22, and those are GMRS channels, and those do require license.
How about MARV DSL?
Yeah, this is W6 DSL. I got one question. You're on amateur radio. You're only allowed an antenna no higher than 200 feet of the existing terrain. Is there a limit, say you put a tower up 300 feet, is there a limit on that?
Good.
Boy, I think there is. I'd have to refer to my rules, but I think there is. And it's never been an issue with me because I don't need to go that high. If I'm up on top of the mountain, you know, I've got 5,000 or 6,000 foot up already, and another 20 feet or 50 feet or on the tower, any place on the tower is not an issue. It's only an issue at the home, and I don't believe it's an issue at all, actually. So I don't have an answer for that. I don't know. I'd have to refer to the rules.
Flat land. You know, you get out there in Iowa and Illinois and all them other places there, and it's flat. And maybe
that. But I'd be happy to get the answer for you.
WR6.
And I heard you EYE, and Marv, I agree that's something that I'd be interested in finding out, and maybe Ed can find out for us or direct me to a website where actually that's at, just for FYI information. Go ahead, Ed, EYE.
I have a comment and a question. First of all, with regard to a comment that the other Ed made regarding using a call sign, I'm looking at my GMRS license, and I don't see anything on here about a call sign. So I'm not sure what he is talking about when he says using your call sign when using GMRS. So I'd like to have a reply to that. The second comment is that while the numbers that the gentleman referred to are correct, it has been my experience that the actual channel labels 1 through 22 on any given radio does not correspond directly. That is, channel 1 on that radio may not be channel 1 in the license or in the series of numbers that he was referring to, so that you have to know your radio in order to know whether you're on GMRS or FRS, because you have to know which channel on the radio refers to what channel in the list of frequencies that he was noting.
EYE, in reference to your call sign, is actually WQHB794. And the reason I know that is before we did this, I decided I would go through the various communities to see how many actually GMRS licenses are around. And just for reference, there's 6 of them licensed in Wrightwood, 4 of them licensed in Phelan. Great. Canyon Hills has 5. Oak Hills has 2. Little Rock has 4. And Victorville has, looks like maybe 19 of them. 19 of them. It looks like Lake Los Angeles has 1. KW6WW, net control. And back to you, Ed, for DOL.
KW6DOL. Yes, you're absolutely correct on the numbering system on the radios being inconsistent. Channel 1 on one brand radio may not be the same as the reference channel 1 frequency that the FCC allocated as being defined as channel 1. Now, if you have a chart, and a lot of the radios come with correspondence that will give you the frequencies, FRS frequencies have 4 digits after the decimal. GMRS frequencies only go 3 decimals. So, it might be like 575 after the decimal. Then you know, and if it's 5750, you can ignore the 0. So you know it's a GMRS frequency. Whereas the others are interstitial or in between frequencies, and they have 4 digits after the decimal point. I think you had a 2-part question, and I forgot what the other one was.
I think his other question had reference to he wasn't sure that he had had a call sign. You still there, Ed, EYE?
Yes, I just doubled with you, John. This is EYE. Did you get that call sign from QRZ?
No, I don't think QRZ actually has that on their, I don't think they're into that database. Actually, that's from FCC and the database there. You can actually go in to license searches, and you can actually go to amateur radio, or you can go to DMRS, and you can put in a zip code, you can put in a city name, and look it up, and it gives you a real clean listing. So did you hear the call, your call sign that I gave you, Ed?
Yes, I did, John. I was sitting here on the couch listening to this, and I wasn't prepared to write it down, so I didn't get it written down, so I'll go on to the FCC website and pick it up that way.
We have any additional questions for Ed, KB6DOL, regarding FRS or GMRS radios?
CAA.
CAA.
Yeah, my question is, are one or both of these bands what they used to call Class A systems bands? I heard about it a long time ago, and that's quite different. And also regarding antenna height, it has a lot to do with whether or not you're close to an airport and you're allowed so many feet above existing structure, depending on the distance from the local airport, and it's all giving you the rules and regs, FCC, commercial radio. I did it when I had a simplex frequency for my block business years ago. Back over to you, John.
And Ed, DOL, you got any comments on that one?
I guess he's correct. It is the former Class A CB radio, which is now grandfathered. The old call signs, one similar to mine, which is KAD6554, there are 3-4 call signs. In other words, it has three letters and four numbers. And today's call signs have four letters and three numbers. And they usually start with a W. And they're usually a little bit tricky, kind of tongue twisted to say. They're not near as convenient as many ham radio call signs are. But yes, it's Class A CB radio, whereas your CB radio that most often we're familiar with is a Class D CB. I haven't heard Class A in years. It's just strictly GMRS now. Oh, and a footnote on the looking up the license. If you'll do a Google, FCC, and then ULF, Universal Licensing System, that'll take you right to the ULF system, which you can do a general search for either the name, the call sign, the upper end, or you can do an advanced search and really get tricky with frequencies and zip codes and all that stuff. But if you go to the ULF, Universal Licensing System, just put into Google FCC and then a space ULF, and it'll come up there.
Got you, Zero. Ed, are you, being as though that you're involved with half a dozen different repeaters, how much abuse are you seeing with GMRS radios versus the CBs?
WR6.
Well, not near as much as there could be, and it depends a lot on what frequency you operate on. For the most part, there's not too much interference on GMRS. True GMRS radios are a little on the expensive side. Like I said, it's just like buying a 440 amateur radio rig. So you're looking at a couple MRS. When they first were going to come out with MRS, I have a very good friend that was in the radio business until he retired, and we acquired three prototype MRS radios. At the time, I had a GMRS repeater on Beacon Hill in Narco, 12-level hill. It's not really a mountain. And we wanted to see just what kind of interference we get, so we put it on one of the tones in the repeater, and we keyed up the repeater. So then we went down to the bottom of the hill, and still keyed it up. We got in the car and started driving north on Hamner Avenue, and 13 miles later, we're still keying it up. So then we knew, this is not going to be good, and it turned out it is not good.
KW6WW, net control. HNO.
Okay. That FCC website, if you can remember that much, is wireless.fcc.gov/ULS. That goes directly to the ULS home Universal Licensing Service homepage, and you can hit the license search button near the center of the top half of your page, and start searching from there. Advanced search can cover all services with the same query. Or you can just select one service and do the equivalent of an advanced search, only limited to the one service, which can be useful sometimes, which a lot of people do for amateur. KG6HNO.
Thank you, Gerald. Any additional questions for Ed before we let him go on anything about FRS or GMRS radios? Ed, I know you got as many questions for Ed as I do, and I bet I could keep Ed on here for an hour or two and keep asking him questions. Go ahead, EYE.
Yes, KI6EYE. Yes, Ed, DOL. Our primary interest in using these radios would be for very local, short distances. I would say probably up to maybe a mile, at most 5 miles. And we're looking at FRS, GMRS that would be suitable for that use within the village of Wrightwood primarily. Wondering what kind of price range of radio that we would be looking at in order to have that as a reasonably reliable capability.
Good questions, Ed. In fact, I'm sitting here thinking about asking Ed DOL about the cost of repeater and possibly putting a repeater in, and but I think we're going to get to the point where my questions are going to be probably more technical, but they're going to take a while to explain, but maybe DOL could answer your question.
Are you talking about this for your own personal use, or is it in conjunction with a CERT program or something else?
It's for a CERT program up here in Wrightwood. Sonny and I are the Wrightwood directors for the advanced CERT training, and we're responsible for team coordination and formation.
Okay, excellent. I suppose I probably would endorse the FRS radios for that purpose because of the cost and because it's UHF and is a reliable frequency band. You're not going to get any hit for real serious interference except from GMRS. Now, good program. Oh, you know what? You might want to look this up, too. It slipped my mind. I'll have to come back to that. I can't remember what it's called now. Anyway, it's an FRS program similar to what Gordon West has in his neighborhood, where there's maybe one block or two blocks or three blocks or whatever with an FRS user, and that information is relayed to a GMRS user who is scattered further away, and then eventually it's transferred over to ham radio for dissemination to OES or wherever. I cannot remember that. You know what? I'll email John this program because it's pretty good. But for reliable information, for reliable communications in Wrightwood, you've got all kinds of issues there. I guess my favorite would be GMRS because you're dealing with 5 watts instead of a half a watt. That will help overcome the trees, the mountains, the rocks, the buildings, and all the other deals that you have to contend with. But then you have to also deal with the cost. And you can use a portable antenna. So my choice, GMRS.
And Ed, UIE. Did that give you a short version answer for now on your question?
Yes, John. Thank you. And by the way, I am familiar with the CERT program in Costa Mesa, so I know what Ed DOL is talking about. So it's KI-60Y.
And EYE, you can bet that I'm going to be continuing talking with DOL and along the same lines that you are. I'm figuring out what we could best use for this area within the Swart Owl Valley. I would think that for CERT that GMRS would be outstanding for the valley, and FRS would work, but not anywhere near as well. Any final question for Ed before we let him go?
Bill.
George.
This is K6MBL. I disagree. I think, for example, for Division B in Wrightwood, I think FRS would be very usable. As long as we interface with a ham, I kind of disagree on going GMRS. We do have ham communications already set up. But FRS is a heck of a lot cheaper. It doesn't require the license, and anybody can communicate with a ham who has a ham rig and FRS, and we have our emergency communications without spending a lot of money and having people get extra licenses they may not need.
Very valid point, George. And I think those are things that we need to take a look at. You know, I spoke to Ed a few times about this, and other people that are in the CERT program, San Bernardino County. And I think that FRS radios, personally, should be part of a CERT backpack, and use of proper radio protocol should be taught as part of the CERT class. Any comments, any final comments, KB6DOL?
Well, yes, I have two comments. First of all, GMRS is a wonderful way to increase membership in ham radio. And I was able to get my wife introduced into ham radio because, I had CB years and years ago, and of course we had handles, and hers was, her handle actually was shut that blankety blank off. That was her handle. And when I got my GMRS license, Well, gee, it's good for the whole family. So she didn't have to study. She didn't have to learn code. She didn't have to take a test. She didn't have to do any of that. In fact, I had already written the check to the FCC, so she didn't have to do anything. All she had to do is pick up the button, the microphone, and hit the PTT button and talk. So once she got familiar with talking on GMRS, then it was an easy transition into amateur radio, and got her. So now, as far as MRS in Wrightwood, I want you to do some homework and look up MURS, M-U-R-S. That's another rascal that is license free. It's VHF. You can program it in with your 2-meter handheld, and it has a 2-watt capability instead of a 0.5-watt. So check out MURS. Don't discount that one. And with that, I'll sign. And thank you very much. It's been great. KD6DOL.
Ed, we really appreciate you coming on and giving us your background information about the FRS and GMRS, and you'll be hearing some more from me. Again, I'd like to thank you, and this is KW6WW Net Controls.